Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Well, 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 ladies and gentlemen, get ready for another episode through the looking glass of reality that we live in, This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob.
It's become that, hasn't it?
We are. When we started this, or we even talked about starting this, the world was a different place. It was only 3 years ago.
Has it been even 3 years?
Two and a half years ago.
I know. I got some business to take care of before we get on with the show. I have to mention that we are proud to have some amazing sponsors. The First Lady of Love, our executive producer here, has hammered me to remind you all about these sponsors, so I'm going to dutifully do so. You can go to doctor.com and get these products to include Hydralyte, available at Rite Aid or at hydralyte.com/DREDREW. And for a limited time, the listeners save 30%. Just click on that Hydralyte banner and use the code DRDREW18 at checkout. It's Hydralyte, HYDRALYTE.com/Dr. Drew, and then Dr. Drew 18 at checkout. We have a new product called Genotex Tox Protect, created by Genotox Labs. It is a really interesting product. It starts with a simple one-time cheek swab to establish a patient's DNA identity. Once submitted, the sequencing is completed. Then you have this DNA sequence to verify that any subsequent urine samples matches the patient. So you don't have to observe anymore because you know for sure it is the patient's urine. In addition, they screen for synthetic urine, irregular values that would indicate dilution or other adulteration. It pretty much guarantees accountability. And this is a major problem. It's all we have in addiction treatment. The only test is the urine tox screen. We really don't do blood tests or anything else. And by the way, they're not as good as the urine tox. So that's our test for addiction. I'm excited to see this service being used, and I think it can significantly improve chances of success in treatment. So think about sharing it with your facility. Go to drdrew.com/toxprotect. That is my website, drdrew.com/toxprotect. And then, Bob, here's a product you may like. It's True Niagen, dietary supplement designed to boost key cellular resource called NAD, or nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. And to learn more about the research science of True Niagen, very impressive, go to doctor.com/True Niagen. That's T-R-U-N-I-A-G-E-N. That's at our website, True Niagen. And Bob, for your liver, I'm telling you, the data there looks very impressive, so you might think about that. And, of course, last but not least, our friends at Heal. This is an amazing product, has the potential to change healthcare. You get a licensed, highly trained, hand-selected physician in your home, on demand, on your schedule, guaranteed within 2 hours, flu shots, physicals, sick children, sick adults, whatever it might be, they will come to you. It's a mobile app that puts the power of on-demand medical care in your fingertips. Simply sign up at heal.com, H-E-A-L.com, and they're available 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And the regions that are being covered by Heal are growing. Right now it's Los Angeles, Orange, San Diego, and San Francisco counties, Washington, D.C., Northern Virginia. They accept all major insurance plans, or it's just $99 all in without insurance. Check that out at heal.com/DREW today. Now, are you happy, honey? Let's get on with the show. Well, our guest today is Darren Prince. He's a sports and celebrity agent who first started his company at the age of 14. He was a millionaire by the age of 20. He is presently the CEO and president of Prince Marketing Group.
Wait, there's a little in between.
Hold on, I'm going to
tell
you.
He had to have gone bankrupt by the time he was 25.
I'm going to tell
you.
Or
he wouldn't be on This Life.
26 years on opiates, 10 years of sobriety. Hold on. 10 years of sobriety, and he's got a new book, Aiming High, How a Prominent Sports and Celebrity Agent Hit Bottom at the Top.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about.
Hey,
welcome.
Darren.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me.
Can you hear us? You're at a music festival?
No, a recovery festival.
Oh, recovery festival.
The first annual recovery fest. Macklemore is playing, I think, at about 8 o'clock tonight.
Oh, my God.
They're expecting maybe 10, 12,000 people, maybe more.
Where is it? Where is it? What part of the U.S.?
It's in Providence, Rhode Island.
Oh, there you go.
Crazy. Who's sponsoring it?
A lot of different sponsors.
A bunch of drugs.
There's got to be about 7, 8, 9.
Buprenorphine.
Yeah, drug companies. So, Darren, what are we going to learn from your book?
One more time. You broke up.
Well, let me, before I ask about the book, how's Dennis doing? Dennis, Darren was instrumental in getting Dennis into Celebrity Rehab and Sober House. How's our buddy Dennis doing?
Dennis Rodman is doing great. Years he's had since post-retirement. I'm very proud of him. As we say, it's one day at a time. Some days better than others, but he's having a really good year, being a better father. And Drew, as you know, he reconnected with Shirley,
his
Deborah,
mom,
and Kim, his mother and his sister, for a dinner for the first time in 25 years back in April.
In Dallas?
In Dallas?
You know, it was a really very special evening.
Was it in Dallas? Did you go down to see them?
In Dallas. Yep, in Dallas.
So let me tell you something. As a clinician who's been doing this a long time, I always knew that some of the people that looked good getting sober on Celebrity Rehab were not going to do well in the long run.
Yeah.
And I always thought in my heart of hearts, one day me and Dennis are going to be hanging out and sober laughing about these times.
Wow.
It might be 10 years from now. It might be 15 years from now. But I had an experience with him at the gym where there was no cameras.
Yeah.
That was a different Dennis. Uh-huh. Do you understand?
Yeah, no,
so a lot of Dennis's whole thing is public persona and reaction to what people think he wants them to be, or what, you know what I mean?
Playing a character almost.
Yeah, he's playing a character, Dennis Rodman, which that's why we say his first and last name.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
I noticed that you love going to people's real names, but you also like getting to who he really is. You're better out with women to get them to, but men are just as defensive and become these fake things.
Yeah.
And Dennis is prime of that.
It's true. That's true. I agree.
And so I'm so glad to hear he's doing good. I know he's, in the end, if he lives, he's going to get sober.
I think so, as long as his brain doesn't get too damaged. I saw his scans that were, they scared me. But tell us about the book, Aiming High, How a Prominent Sports and Celebrity Agent Hit Bottom at the Top.
So Aiming High is about my life as a secret opiate addict, I would say, for 20-plus years. Very few people knew. In the end, there was maybe a handful. I functioned at a very, very high level, managing some of the most revered icons of our time, from Smoking Joe Frazier, Magic Johnson, Hulk Hogan, Muhammad Ali, Pamela Anderson when I was 25 years old. And inside, I was broken and living the life on the outside that everybody thought they would want. And most men would give their right arm for it. But I was spiritually sick and disgusted at myself in the end and didn't want to live anymore after 20-plus years of that sort of life. And eventually, by the grace of God, I found my awakening on July 2nd, 2008, and started to live the life I was meant to live rather than the one I thought I was meant to live.
Did you seek help and treatment, or obviously something happened on that day? Where did you go on that day?
My uncle at the time and his girlfriend were in the 12-step rooms, which they still are. And oddly enough, I told Drew this, I reminded him, back in 2005, he called me to get Dennis on the show, and Dennis didn't want to do it. And I thought I was sober. And I told him I was on Suboxone for a year and a half at the time. And that was one of the first times I realized that being on Suboxone for a year and a half really isn't the smartest thing you can do, because it was absolute hell getting off of it, just as bad as the real stuff. And
the company that makes Suboxone just edited it.
Just ended his call.
I don't think it was me.
That's not a conspiracy, is it, Drew?
Go ahead,
there you go. There you are back. You were talking about it. Suboxone and how hard it is to get off of.
Yeah, I would have given anything to just get off the Suboxone and live one normal, sober, peaceful day. That's how desperate
how much,
I was in
how
the
much
end.
Were you on?
Suboxone, I don't remember. I think they were orange pills. I was probably taking three of them a day. So I don't remember the milligrams back then.
Were there two? Orange
ones? Yeah. It was just a horrible existence, man. And
well, you can't go off it all at once.
Yeah, no, it was just, and then I was flip-flopping at one point, going back on the real stuff. I remember Evel Knievel passed away. I couldn't handle it. It was the first client that I lost, and who? I went back on the real shit for 3 days, and then went back on the Suboxone.
Who are you saying died?
Evel Knievel.
Oh, Evel Knievel. Yeah, he was the greatest, and he battled it. Listen, I love hearing that you're at a convention. Listen to all the laughter of sober people in the background. Yeah. That's what sobriety is. And it's being portrayed as this borathon or this rules or this psychobabble-ish thing.
No,
it's joy. Sobriety is joy.
Exactly.
It's freedom.
But joy is an interpersonal experience. You have to experience it with others.
Well, yep. But listen to the laughter. Listen to the community there. Listen to the motorcycle.
we got to live life as sober, happy people. And we get to laugh for the right reasons, not the wrong reasons anymore. We're laughing because we're happy, not because we're hurting.
Yeah, I always embrace the line in the 12-step book. We wear our sobriety like a loose, comfortable garment. And we're not a glum lot. And I think that we need to flush out the glumness of what sobriety is and present it as the joy and freedom that it is. And that's
for people that really don't understand what the fellowship gives us, the bridge back to life, they're shortchanging themselves. Because it's just a program for living and learning how to get through the ups, the downs, the in-betweens, and just doing it sober.
Yeah,
and doing it with dignity and respect, you know?
My experience was, in the beginning, my life was hard. My viewpoint was horrible. My perception of reality was unbalanced. And it helped me get out of that and into a more healthy way of being and looking at the world. Then it also helped me deal with success, because success for somebody who suffers from depression and alcoholism is hard to handle, because it doesn't pay off the way you think it does. It doesn't mow your lawn. It doesn't do everything and magically make everything go away.
No.
And so I think it's helped me in so many ways, and I try to convey it, and people just don't understand.
What do we do with the, and probably there are regional differences in mutual aid societies too, right? And I'm wondering if some of the stuff you're seeing out here is what's frustrating you.
Yeah, I think I've discussed it with other clinicians. It's in Florida too. So it's as if the psychobabble and the insurance driven what treatment is has trickled into the 12-step world. And people are, I say it, but you know, psychotherapy from plumbers. Like, we don't need that.
Yeah,
we need plumbers to be plumbers and psychotherapists to be psychotherapists.
Yes. And recovering alcoholics to be recovering alcoholics.
And it's all the lines, like everything in society, are all blurred now.
Yeah.
And narcissism at the center of it, a lot of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it with age that you just that you don't mind staying in your lane? Is that a part of getting older?
Yeah.
I don't mind staying in my lane.
No, that's part of it.
I don't need to be the king of everything and the answer of all things.
That's right.
But when I was 30, you knew me. Oh, Jesus.
But that's all narcissism, borderline.
On your belt. I think that, you know, the more sober people connect with sober people, we show each other joy a lot more than any therapist could ever do so. So, you know, we're learning from each other's experience, what we've been through, how we get through it, and how we do it with a smile, and that we're members of the No Matter What Club. Then, no matter what happens in our life, we're not going to pick up a drink, a drug, or any substance that's going to affect us. You know?
Well, what's interesting is, you know, the Me Too movement started about 3 years ago, and I remember thinking that that's what the 12-step world was to me. It was people who had done the things I'd done, experienced the trauma I'd experienced, and they were sharing their thing too, and it was so powerful. It made me feel not alone, not by myself, that other people had stolen from their moms or you know, done these things that I was so ashamed of, that me too. When the first time a sponsor says, you know, when you say the most shameful thing, I won't say what it is, I'll say it in a general way. I traded sex relations for drugs. And the person that was helping me said, oh, me too.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, there's me too in sobriety. Absolutely. Very powerful.
Identification.
Absolutely.
Community.
Share.
I was just going to say that's That's why it's identifying and not comparing. Exactly.
Yeah. And so you've had this miracle happen. Hopefully it's going to happen for Dennis. I've always thought that it would. I think he has a, you know, he did something while he was drunk that I just thought was so amazing. He had a
Went
house.
Went to North Korea.
Huh?
Went to North Korea.
No, well, yeah, that. Well, he solved world peace while he was drunk on a binge. But he took one of his houses that I think he was going to financially lose and put it up for auction or some sort of raffle for this drug program.
Oh, wow.
Right? I mean, he just has a good heart, man. There's not a lot of people with good hearts around anymore. Right?
No,
and you hate to see them self-destruct and debase themselves and you hate to see that. Because when you see somebody with a good heart. Right?
Everybody knows him.
Phil knows. Everybody knows. He's got a good heart. And that's an underappreciated thing.
I go back with him 22 years. He's always been that way. Whether he's making $20 million a year or, you know, a few hundred grand a year, it didn't matter. Dennis isn't about money. He's about, you know, just, you know, being happy, being around certain people that he cares about. He's got a heart of gold. He'd give every last dollar in his pocket to help somebody out.
And this is not BS. That's the truth of the man that I've known for 15 years. So let me tell you another thing about it. People constantly, he's an easy target. Oh, Dennis Rodman. He's been a target for 25 years since he wore the dress to a book signing. Who hasn't worn a dress to a book signing in my world? So,
by the way, that's considered now, you know, sort of enlightened. Right,
but let me just tell you this: this is a way to shut down criticism of Dennis. All I say to people who are criticizing Dennis, you know, and unsolicited criticism, you know, that's the new world we live in. I always say, do you know that his father sired 50 children, and Dennis didn't even know his father?
It's crazy, and his name's Philander. How about that?
Yeah. Well, you say that, and people just stop their criticism of him and say, what? Explain that to me. And I explain it to them, and they go, oh, my God, that's what needs to happen in every little way in America to stop this hatefulness.
Yeah, yeah. People have to stop and understand
I think a guest on a prior podcast said, addressing right when it is.
Yeah.
So when people always criticize Dennis Rodman, say he's a fool or whatever over this Korea stuff, I would say, you know what his childhood was like?
Yeah.
He slept in backyards.
Was he the only tall one?
Huh?
Was he the only tall one?
He got tall late, like when he was 20.
No, he tells a great story. I don't know if it was on Celebrity Rehab. The dad came to him when he was famous on the Bulls and said, I'm your father. And he said, fuck you, I don't care, and just walked away.
Yeah.
I drove away. A couple of weeks later, at a hotel when they were on the road, the dad was standing there with a guy that looked exactly like Dennis and said, I'm your father and this is one of your brothers. And he said, well, I don't know who the fuck you are, but that certainly looks like my brother.
But he got tall late, like all of a sudden.
At 20
or
19.
20 or something, yeah.
But he's a great guy, and I'm so glad you helped
him.
That's
exactly what it is. It was a godsend. He grew 9 inches. 9 inches, he grew 20.
Yeah, that's crazy. And so I want to talk about Joe Frazier. He's one of my all-time heroes. I have a picture of him in my living room. What was Joe Frazier like?
He was the best. I mean, he was just a one-of-a-kind class act all the way. He used to tell me that there's no wrong way to do right and no right way to do wrong.
Whoa! Wait, say that again.
That's a great one.
Drew's head just almost exploded. Say that again.
There's no wrong way to do right, and there's no right way to do
wrong.
Joe, let me take him to all the big events, had zero ego. It didn't matter. Pacino, De Niro, Lionel Richie, Spielberg, Michael Jordan, Michael Jackson. I met everybody through him. They were in such awe of people like Ali and Frazier. I spent a lot of time around Ali, too, over the years. And they're two incredible human beings. Remarkable.
Oh, sorry. It keeps cutting out, and I don't know when to talk. But did Joe Frazier, was he real humble, and he worked at his gym in Philadelphia with young kids and stuff?
He took every dime that he had and took kids off the street, gave them lodging, bought them cars, fed them, got them clothes. At some points, he had a couple dozen kids.
Okay, we got to get that whole statement again.
Yeah, yeah.
Dedicated his life to young kids.
To give them a shot.
He said a couple dozen kids living
with
him.
Whatever he had to do to give these kids.
He took kids off the streets of Philadelphia.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And Ali did his thing in the greater, bigger, more public arena, but Frazier was doing it on a ground level, I heard, for decades. Right? Customato. Did you know
he had a high rise in downtown Philly? Beautiful high rise the last 5 years of his life. If he stayed there a couple days a month, it was a lot. He loved staying in the gym. He loved being right in the middle of downtown Philly, which, you know, obviously wasn't the best part of downtown Philly. And he loved just mentoring those kids and teaching them about life, not just boxing, teaching them about life and how to just be a good person and do the right thing.
And speaking of boxing, so Customato was like that also, right? The great trainer.
To Mike. Yep, to Mike. I've done a lot of work with Mike, and you know, he told me some amazing stories about
Mike
him
who?
And
Mike Tyson.
Mike told me some amazing stories how Cus worked on his psyche as a 15-year-old, a 16-year-old, and he used to tell.
All right, we'll take a little break. Be right back.
I want to welcome True Niagen to the show. True Niagen, of course, is a dietary supplement designed to boost a key cellular resource called NAD. Or nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. A lot of research today on NAD. While the science is preliminary, studies are really showing some promising results. I've been watching this carefully. And what's exciting about these studies, it indicates the research suggests that increased NAD levels may potentially help with cellular metabolism, regulate circadian rhythm, and they're even hopeful that it may slow the effects of aging. I take it because the research looks very compelling. Again, these studies are all very early. The science, though, is impressive. Biohacking community has gotten on board with this. I've been intrigued by the possibilities surrounding NAD and the research behind True Niagen. I suggest you check out their website for yourself. Back in June, I had the chance to speak with the company's chief scientific advisor, Dr. Charles Brenner, here on this podcast, and it was a fascinating discussion that really piqued my interest in all the possible applications for a product like this. Definitely check out that episode, and to learn more about the research, science, and the True Niagen supplements, visit drdrew.com/TrueNiagen. That's my site, drdrew.com/TRUNIAGEN. True Niagen. One of the most crucial components of addiction recovery is accountability. Part of what makes addiction so difficult is the inability to self-regulate. Now, this is especially problematic for those in outpatient recovery or pain management program. And while the facilities require regular urine tests to ensure compliance, frequently the actual tests are not even observed. And this led to an epidemic of falsified samples where patients either use someone else's urine or widely available synthetic urine. The result is a lot of addicts carry right on using undetected, and they get none of the benefits from treatment. The only objective test we have for addiction is the urine screen. Now, recently, I learned about a new solution that virtually eliminates the possibility of faking tests, even in facilities where they are unobserved. This is called ToxProtect, a DNA-verified drug test and lab service that provides 100% sample authenticity. ToxProtect was created by Genetox Labs, can be used in place of any standard urine drug test. It starts with simple one-time cheek swab to establish the patient's identity. Once submitted, each subsequent screening uses DNA testing to verify that that sample matches the patient. And additionally, ToxProtect screens for synthetic urine and irregular values that would indicate dilution or other adulteration. In other words, this pretty much guarantees accountability. I'm excited to see this service being used, and I think it will significantly improve an addict's chances for successful recovery. I'm going to be talking more about Genetox Labs and ToxProtect on future shows. Thankfully, ToxProtect is being used by more and more facilities every day. Be sure to ask for it by name wherever you or your loved one is receiving care. To get more information or share it with your facilities, go to drdrew.com/ToxProtect. That is drdrew.com/ToxProtect.
We are back. We are efforting Darren. Is he with us yet?
Darren?
He's cutting in and out, but he's still on the line.
There you are.
Darren,
so tell us what.
Tell us about Cus again, because it cut out.
Sorry. So Mike told me one day a couple of years ago that Cus would work on his psyche as a teenager when he first started training with him, 15 years old, and said, Mike, you're going to be just as great as this Capricorn Kings were. And the Capricorn Kings, you really got to know boxing. Ali, Frazier, and Foreman were all Capricorns. They were all born 8 days apart. They all won the Olympic gold medal 4 years apart. Ali in 60, Frazier in 64, Foreman in 68. And he goes, that was always the reference. You're going to be a Capricorn king. And Mike said, little by little, I started knocking people out. I started training better. I started dieting better. And I truly started believing that I was becoming a Capricorn king. I went from kid from the streets to the baddest motherfucker in the world.
Wow.
Because,
wow.
because of custom auto. But we also talked about this, Bob. And so Mike told me, even though he was the king of the world at one point at 19 years old, that nobody ever gave him a handbook on how to deal with life being a brother from the streets with $100 million in the bank.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that.
And we don't think about that. It's easy to judge. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, but you know, I'll tell you what the NBA does.
The NBA is doing a better job than any sport at getting children. And I believe, you know, from Lonzo Ball to the kids that just got drafted, they are children ready for adult life.
No, and millions of dollars. They really do help them. You and I used to do – were you with me when we did work for them?
No, the NHL.
Oh, so I used to work for the NBA. And the way they looked after every single player was amazing, amazing.
And so you know, I just think that what you're pointing out is that mentorship is a lost art in our society. And I try to mentor – I probably mentor like 20, 30 people.
Yeah.
And it makes me have to know the answers and be confident in being balanced and informing people the right way treatment should be.
You're right. Mentoring is key.
You mentored me.
Yep. Mentoring is key.
It's lost.
I know.
And so when you talk about Customato or Joe Frazier or these great icons of sports and of mentorship and the responsibility that it was, right?
It's a great conversation to have, because we live in this world of everything being a menu or a recipe or a CBT workbook, or as opposed to two humans relating and one mentoring, so to speak, the other. I mean, that's a very important and powerful process. It's experiential learning.
Bob, have you had a chance to read my book yet?
No, I will, though. I got
so the intro, Monday is the 43rd anniversary of The Thrill in Manila, which is obviously the greatest fight of all time, Ollie Frazier 3.
Yeah.
And my book opens the intro, which was my crowning achievement. I'm blessed to get Muhammad and Joe together for dinner in 2002 in Philadelphia, the night before the NBA All-Star game, and I was high as a kite on opiates because I never felt I belonged. Never felt I belonged. I couldn't be present for the moment. I was absolutely zooted. The next day, I sat center court with the two kings. Oh. Same thing. Out of my mind on freaking opiates, in and out of the bathroom, snorting them, crushing them, whatever I had to do because I didn't want to feel. I felt so broken and so unworthy of this honor, these men that I spent hundreds and hundreds of days with collectively, that how the hell did Darren Prince, a kid from a special education class.
Right. And that's what
would have given the right arm. And so I finally felt this was the right platform to share that beautiful experience of what it was like being there, not feeling worthy at the time, but food recovery and just celebrating 10 years. I know I had every right to be there. And it took a long, long time to come with grips to that, to understand that who I was back then isn't who I am right now. And that's a beautiful thing, too, about recovery. I was there. I wasn't present. I could look back at it and know I deserved to be there in that moment with those guys. And it was amazing to see them hug, embrace, cry, apologize to one another. The greatest rivalry in the history of global sports. All the taunting. And I was there to witness the two of them. It was... That's the intro of the book. So,
well, Darren,
I sent Drew a copy, so pick it up.
Yeah, I'll get it. I'm an eBay guy. I'll find it on eBay.
All right, Darren, we're gonna let you go. Enjoy the festival and say hi to Tim and everybody that we know over there.
Anna David's there.
Anna David, everybody, and please say hi. And we'll talk to you again soon, Darren. We'll look for. In the meantime, we'll read Aiming High. All right.
There you go.
And aiminghighbook.com or Amazon. They can pick it up.
I'm looking it up right now.
Bob's getting it right now. All right, Darren, take care of yourself.
Thanks, guys.
Talk soon.
Thank you so much.
I want to take some emails now.
Go ahead.
This is an easy one. Let's see. Oh, it's a compliment. I love you and Bob so much. Celebrity Rehab was beautiful when I found the hashtag You Live podcast a couple months ago. And all those amazing conversations and episodes, it was like Christmas morning. You guys are doing God's work. This is, thank you, Nama. I think I pronounced her name right. Now, listen to this one. You ready?
I'm ordering a book, Drew. I can only do one thing at a time.
This is someone that's been emailing us for a while.
Okay, what is it?
And it's Thomas, is that right? Thomas John. Can you please help me? I want to speak out about a terrible thing that took my 18-year-old son's life.
Oh,
it's, listen to this. It's called autoerotic asphyxiation.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Many people die from it every year at all ages. I promised myself I'd write you every day until I get my story across. Police found a website on my son's computer showing him how to do it. As so few people are willing to talk about the subject due to the embarrassing nature of it, it's time to broadcast the message so parents will know what it is and have a chance to talk with their kids. It's something I wish someone had done for me. Alex would still be alive today. And he goes on to tell the horror of what happened. So this is not brought up enough. You know, I believe...
Well, you suspected Chris Cornell was doing
that. Well, I really expected Anthony Bourdain. That's what happened there. Because even to this day, people are going, I don't understand. He wasn't the least bit depressed. He was perfectly fine the day before.
Why so quickly? Like, I was shocked by the Anthony Bourdain thing. Within 6 hours of his death, it was reported a suicide.
Yeah.
So was there a note?
No. No note. A local town in France, coroner, a little French, you know, they don't know. They don't think about these things. They're not. And listen, anyone with history of opiate addiction, a hanging death that doesn't go as usual should be considered autoerotic asphyxiation, in my humble opinion. Right?
I've never done it, so I don't know. Well, I never had any interest in
it. It's very, very common. And parents need to be aware of it. They have websites now for instructing kids how to do it. The usual question is why? Why do they do it? Why do they do it? Well, for some, the sort of reward system is so burned out from opiates that they don't feel satisfaction from normal sexual activity. And so they need some sort of – this gives a higher rush of let's say, endorphins to the brain. And it might be just part of the addiction, just trying to get that high again.
How come I've tried almost everything except for that? Do you ever think about that? Why would I not do that? It just seemed like crazy to me.
It hadn't become a thing when you were until you've been sober a long, 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 long time.
Oh, really? When did it start? No, Michael Hutchins died of it, right?
The guy from NXS. That was 10 years ago, right? That was 10 years.
Way more than that, I think.
Yeah, that was your first started hearing about it then.
But that was reported as what it was. I remember Paula was his girlfriend.
Yes, yeah, it was.
Now she's dead too, I think.
Oh no!
Oh God!
But remember, didn't you and I talk to David Carradine's ex?
Yeah, she said he was doing it.
Yeah, so. So it's out there. It's out there. It's a lot, and it's taking young lives. I had a friend die of this. And
You did?
Yeah. Yeah. A 28-year-old kid. And he was a recovering opiate addict. And I always,
1997 is Michael Hutchins.
So it's 20 years ago.
20 years ago.
Yeah. I'd never really heard of it till then, by the way. That was where I was
How old are we that 10 years can be 20 years? It's like, whatever.
I know.
Oh, God.
I know. Put your headset on. Read what? Oh, she wants you to read something.
Okay, I'm going to read this. This actually isn't a question, just a compliment. I love you,
I just
Bob
read
Forrest.
It. Susan, I just read it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'd read that one.
Oh, I was talking to Darren. I'm sorry.
Yeah, clearly you were not
so,
with us.
So that's such
Wait, this might be a stooge. This looks like my friend's wife.
Is that right?
This is Mark Cates' wife.
Don't say that.
No, it can't. It couldn't be.
Well, I missed that because I was talking to Darren because I was trying to apologize that we had to go, but he's going to come back.
Yeah,
and he's going to have some of these people call in.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I just ordered the book, so.
And he's very gung-ho about this.
Great.
So.
No, he's the real deal. You can tell he's at a convention. Come on, you can't fake that. See, I'll tell you one thing. You're around a lot of con artists,
yeah.
Believe it or not.
I know that.
I know that you know and you just would rather not know.
Well, I listen.
Shelly and I are the real deal.
I know that.
Right? There's a lot of other people that you consider. Anna is the real deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? There are a lot of people that you're associated with that aren't the real
deal.
Well,
let's put it this way.
I'm just kidding. Bob, that's Bob, all I'm going to leave it at.
Bob. Is
it,
like me?
Is that bad? No. You're the real deal and more, baby. Listen, he knows what I'm talking about, and Drew's just too nice sometimes.
Hold on. I meet people where they are.
That's a way of saying. So you're not doing what the doctor on a prior podcast said, confront things in the moment when they're full of shit.
If I feel it's productive, I will.
Okay.
Yeah, if I let's feel start, I can get through.
Let's start doing that a little bit. We invite some old guests on.
Okay. I'm good with that.
You give me a list.
I don't want to be mean, but it just it's not good for the person who's distorting things.
Yeah.
I think
I look at that and I think, oh, they're sick. You know, what are they're just not ready.
Mike Cathwood's the real deal.
Yeah.
Carano's good, right?
Yeah, Carano is like a patient. Like, he's the real deal. He was so, he got to the party. Yeah. I hate to keep bringing up your birthday party. He was so anxious. He's like, I don't know. How are you going to be funny in a room like this? How are you going to be funny? All, I was like, who cares? It's Drew's birthday.
Yeah, they all were like, all the comedians were like that.
And then they were like, oh.
This is not right. Because they were out of control of it. It wasn't a comedy stand-up club. Right. It was like, you're going to go up there and do whatever. And
I hate to say this, but I just needed a recording so I could write it off.
Oh, stop it.
I don't care.
See,
it's actually fun.
That's the and more part of your wife.
And more?
And more.
And more.
It's so funny because I wanted to give him a birthday party, and he said, I don't want a birthday party. Don't spend any money. I don't want to do anything. And I called Valerie, and I was like, he doesn't want to do it. And I said, but I kind of had this plan to do a roast at a comedy club and make a podcast.
So make it a podcast and make donations and make it a charitable event.
Yeah, a fundraiser. And I told – so I pitched it to Drew. And he goes, oh, okay, make sure you invite this person and this person and this person.
You should have told the comedians that. That's
I'm
all I'm
sorry
saying.
Sorry if we missed anybody. They're, I feel terrible.
I'm so codependent everywhere I go. And I, you know what? When that person mentioned Al-Anon, I should go back to Al-Anon. I'm calling myself out on that. But anyways, I was so codependent. I was like, Nate, when he gets these tapes, is going to be able to make two shows out of it. That's all I cared about. I know there's a lot of craziness going on. What was funny to me is the people that stayed way in the back and were talking, they were all very conscious of when their turn was.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And I was like, be out here a part of it. There's nobody up in front. And I'll tell you, it was some of my favorite people in your world. Mm-hmm. I won't say who they were, but it's Mike and Anderson. Yeah. We're in the far back booth.
Talking.
And I was like, come on, get over here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And Mike was like, I have to host the second part, so I get to sit back here.
I know. But I think even Adam had fun.
Adam and Drew are dying up here. Let's go up there.
I think Adam had fun, too.
He did, because he loves hostility.
Joel McHale showed up, which is really cool, because he's been a friend of ours for a long time. And we never see him.
He wasn't nervous. I could tell the nervous ones are Saget, Tom Arnold.
Nikki Glaser was freaked out.
Well, because they had to kick it off.
Nikki was a little freaked out.
Well, people who aren't comedians. But the comedians were like, they were either going to seize it and try to do the best they could, but there was a lot of them are very, they're not used to that kind of, open mic
roasting
night type thing, right?
They used to doing their act.
Right.
And this was improv.
You had to battle, right?
Yes.
I practiced my joke. I was going to make it seem like I didn't know it was your birthday and that you and Adam were finally coming out of the closet and getting married. And no one got the joke.
Nobody can hear you. But you know what? It started.
Did you not get
rush,
it? You were sitting right there, Drew.
I just don't remember it. You and I were talking about flawed memories earlier. I just don't remember.
Oh, there's your memory.
Nobody wanted
thing
to roast Drew. I had all these people lined up, and I said, hey, it's going to be kind of a toast thing. And I don't do roasts. And I just would feel very uncomfortable saying mean things about Drew. And I was like, oh, great. So I had to completely reformat it. I said, you know, it really doesn't matter. Just get up there and say something funny about
anything.
You know, anything.
Adam was a little kind to you. I think he was a little emotional that it was your 60th birthday. 60 is a scary number to 57-year-olds, just so you know. How old is Adam?
He's about 55, I think.
Yeah,
54.
That's peer and equal is 6-0. I remember I felt like that. Like, Drew can't be 60 because then that means I'm close to 60.
And he
fucked up.
Prostate cancer. He had cancer and he's still.
And
alive.
You're still chucking.
I know.
And now
you're
on this meat diet.
We raised some money. We had some good donations from our friends.
I know. It's very
That's
nice.
Great.
Should we thank some of the prominent
Should
ones?
We say the funniest moment of the night at the car checkout with Tom Arnold and my lovely wife?
I think you did it on the show already, once, but go ahead.
So we're leaving.
You said it was Bob Saget on the show.
No, it was Tom Arnold.
Yeah, I know.
So Tom Arnold is just he's like a hurricane anywhere he goes, isn't he?
Yeah.
What's he like at the bank? You ever think of that?
Tornado. Still like, sweating.
He's very disorganized.
Can he wait for fast food to be made? Like, I just can't imagine the stress level of his daily existence.
I had lunch with him once where he was calm.
Yeah.
I did.
Was it part when he was relapsing?
No, it was. think about it. He was on a special diet then. And he was really taking care of himself.
I love the guy. I've known him for 30 years now.
I know. It was really sweet of him.
And he is getting worse. I
he
can tell you that.
He actually flew in from another state to see.
It's getting worse. Mm. He was much more. He was fun, but not.
Maybe this TV show is making him wind up.
Yeah. You know? Well, maybe it's this last 2 years making everybody wind
up. Just getting
up. Old. I got to tell you. So we're waiting. We get our car first. He's talking to Chrissy, my wife, and then he says to her, "Your dad is one of the greatest guys in LA. Don't ever forget it."
Talking to your wife about you.
Yes. Referring to me as her
God
father.
Bless him.
So that was
funny.
One thing. But then I want to talk about the trial yesterday. So Chrissy's reaction coming from, and the reason why we click is her dad is much older and she was raised in a more like how we were raised, family system. She was staring. We were in Laguna during the beginning part with the woman's testimony.
In the morning, yeah, Dr.
And she
Ford.
Was like, this is empowering to women, that woman talking, because she was so poised and so dignified.
Yes.
And then we drove from Laguna to our Claremont house and watched the Kavanaugh part.
Oh, boy.
And she just stood in the living room with her mouth open.
Yeah.
And just walked out of the room. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, she's atypical of white suburban educated women.
I don't think so. I'm not sure it's atypical.
They were aghast at how Kavanaugh behaved.
She was not. Were you?
Well, when I first heard about it, I said, you know, here's a guy, he was in high school. And in the 80s, 1982, which is sexual revolution, lots of drinking, everything. And I thought to myself, you know, first of all, think of your, like our kids in that age group. Mm-hmm. Like they were all assholes then, quite frankly.
I understand that, but that's not his behavior. Did you watch the testimony?
He was first in his class. He was on the football team. He was on
Who cares? There was 10,000
of those
people.
A dominating male in his school. And this girl, he was at a party. He may not remember it. He has this thing, his diary and all these things. And, you know, and most of his life, he's been a really stand-up person. Maybe he, in his freshman year in college, he didn't get along with his roommates. He drank too much. And people do kind of remember their freshman year with their roommates. Nobody ever likes each other in freshman year. I had three kids in their freshman year in college, and only one of them liked his roommate, two out of three. But that's such a weird time to have to remember, go back to, and define your entire life by. I mean, I think this guy has done a lot since then. He has been a judge in high court. He is aggressive and
Well, but I mean, I can just counter that. He's done a lot of horrible things, in my opinion, from my point of view.
Yeah.
He's the one that said blowjobs and cigars in the Clinton. Those are his suggestions at the Star Report. He is not some choir
right.
boy.
I don't know he all
is
those things.
He is a partisan hack politician slash lawyer slash judge.
I don't know that, but from what I saw on TV,
you should...
he was standing up for the things he's done well, his family. He doesn't want his whole life destroyed because of this.
Well, he didn't seem to care when it was Chelsea Clinton's life being destroyed. So that's something.
Well,
if
I don't
you
know
wanted,
any of that.
But,
I'm
you,
not, look,
but then
I
you should
I'm
know
apolitical.
Those facts. He was on
I'm
the
apolitical.
Star Report as an up-and-coming
stuff.
Lawyer. He's the one who even Star said, some of these questions I don't know about asking about the cigar. Did you come in her mouth? All these disgusting things came from Brett Kavanaugh.
Really?
Yes.
Didn't know that. Okay.
And so now he's getting 25 years later the retribution
right.
of that.
No.
And but his reaction to it
was right, Bob. But when I was watching it and I was watching him defend himself, I felt like he has a right to have his side of the story.
Right.
And honestly, it's not the white privilege part of it is sad.
I don't get the white privilege part.
You don't see that part?
No, but I hear about it, so I'll go with it. I understand it. Like, listen, I understand that component of it. But this was simply a man becoming unraveled on nationwide TV because he's not getting his way.
Right.
It was like a baby.
He's a job interview.
We're going down a rabbit hole with other people's lives,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
I just want this is a Senate subcommittee hearing about confirming him forward to be voted on for the Supreme Court. It is not a he said, she said. It is not this or that or what the America is being distracted with by his behavior. Now, here's interesting.
It's a character assassination, though, on some level.
But how you react to character assassination it says who you are as a character. Mm-hmm. And Louis C.K.'s reaction to his was was the proper decorum to those kind of accusations, right? He didn't say, my daughters. He didn't do all these histrionics that Kavanaugh did. He simply said, between the public and him and these women, what he did was wrong and he's sorry. There was a certain point when Kavanaugh, in the beginning, he was very tearful reading his statement. Mm-hmm. It was aggressive, but I was like, okay.
When he talked
okay.
about his mother and his
and
daughter.
And he got tearful talking about his father,
and
for sure.
Father.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, he's going to have contrition. And then he just comes off as this belligerent, mm-hmm. like alcoholic.
Well, that's the
And I don't mind
side.
Label him an alcoholic. He has busted blood vessels throughout his face.
Yeah,
he's screaming, defending drinking on the Senate confirmation hearing.
Good for you.
This is it doesn't take, you know, it doesn't take too much.
I just felt like he was being a thorough judge attorney with his own defense, and he was trying to hit everything so that people would understand how that would work. And that's all I thought.
But Louis C.K. didn't do that. Les Moonves didn't do that. Harvey Weinstein didn't even
judges.
Do that. All Harvey Weinstein said was, "I'm the biggest donor to Hillary Clinton." Right? He didn't talk about what it does to his wife or his family. None of these mm-hmm. Me Tooers did what Kavanaugh did yesterday.
Yes.
That and the only person that. Who did that was Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's going to – I just felt like if he would just said, I'm sorry, I don't remember it like this. I don't even remember the night – talking about how horrible is the world that it can – one event can affect somebody for life and me not even think about it.
Lindsey Graham
We need a
totally
way forward
right.
from this.
Lindsey Graham made me feel like – there was one person in the room that really thought – I felt the same way Lindsey Graham did, the way that it was being handled. And that's how I felt for Kavanaugh. Not necessarily whether he did it or not and who was lying. It was just such a
But your point is well taken, Bob, that it would have been – to craft
Even if he
a,
didn't do it, he could have said, I don't remember it, but we need a way forward out of this.
Yes.
This,
just saying, just saying
– Those are the heroes we need on the Supreme Court. Yeah. And I trust – and I'm going to get a bunch of shit from my lefty and left-of-center friends. And almost all my Democratic friends. I trust just Judge Roberts to steer this court. It's our only hope because politics are steering this court. And I'm hoping there are some people, some men and women bigger than politics, bigger than partisanship.
God, I hope so. We need them soon.
It better
right,
be
like
Justice
right
Roberts.
Yeah.
Right?
All right, you guys. Should we wrap this thing up?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My point of view is so weird, but I'm just watching TV. I am not into politics at all. I don't know who's who, so I probably have no voice. And I do appreciate the fact that women have an opportunity to make change now.
All right.
We'll see.
Very happy.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Darren. The Aiming High is the book. Check out myself and Lawrence Vaughn, KBC Midday Live talk show we do there Monday through Friday, noon to 3, also at KGO in San Francisco. Go to drdrew.com, get our weekly newsletter, and sign up for
the
contact
You know, I
list.
Ordered the book, and it said it's not out yet, that I just ordered it, pre-ordered it.
I think it may not be out for another week or so, actually.
Okay. So
It'll be out by the time we get there.
Oh, okay.
And I am going to have an audiobook of our opium series. It is fascinating and extensive. And
can we start a new political party, the Radical Center?
I want to be in the Radical Center. I really do.
So if you want to find the opium series.
I feel like I'm watching.
Will we be hated by everybody?
Well, I don't know. I feel like I'm watching two simultaneous films, and I can see both of them. And reality is somewhere in between. And I'd like to everybody join us in reality, please. So, all right. What's that, Susan?
Find it at drdrew.com.
The Opium Series? Well, the audiobook where we put it
Once
up.
Once it's up.
And we may put some parts of it up on his weekly infusion, too. So look for
if
it
you
there.
Take an Afghani opium poppy and just chew on it, will it get you high?
Nope. You have to take the milk, and then you have to do some make it an alkaloid and do some stuff to it. But and even then,
but the coca leaves in Peru you can chew on and they get you high.
You have to alkalinize that too. You have to put some salt in it, and then it'll get you high. Yeah, you chew on the leaf with salt. That's why they have these salt sticks. They'd stick the sticks in the salt and then stick the stick in their mouth.
Look at you can't see it at home. Yeah. Drew was really doing it.
Because they would jam the leaf in the back of their mouth with this salt stick. And
why? Because
let's just stick it back there and suck on it. And,
when did they realize you could powder
it's a
it?
A lot more than cap.
Well, this is the history of drugs. So you're going to do a stimulant one too next?
Well, if this is well received, dude, the opiate.
Well, you know that the opiate thing has created a huge upswing in this. It's called shake and bake meth.
Oh,
we
right.
could do a whole thing on it next. You
Maybe
can make meth in your house with things you can buy at Home Depot and a drugstore.
Oh my God.
That's what people are taking because they can't get their hands on opiates or drugs or whatever.
Well, they're doing it with the opiates. They're doing meth and opiates now.
It's crazy.
The meth thing is out of control right now.
So you got to do a stimulant thing. That's what I'm saying.
All right.
See you next time.
All right. That's about it for this episode of This Life. Check us out at KBC, being Lawrence Savon, 790 Midday Live Talk Radio, Monday to Friday. You can also tune in every day live via the magic of the internet at kbc.com. If you miss it, we've made it simple for you to find all the shows at drdrew.com, the Adam and Dr. Drew podcast, the Sing One I Do By Myself, the Dr. Drew podcast, This Life, of course, with Bob, Swole Patrol, Mike Cantho, at his new health and fitness podcast. You can find us on Twitter at This Life Podcast, at Dr. Drew, Dairy W, at Rehab Bob Forrest, and of course, our lovely producer at First Lady of Love. I think I know who that is. If you love this show, please subscribe and tell a friend. We appreciate it when you do. We'd love to hear your feedback as well. Send us a message. Join the email list at drdrew.com, drdrew.com/contact. You'll also get a weekly email from us on that. While you're at it, at drdrew.com, please support our sponsors by clicking through the banners. We only advertise products that I can get behind. So thank you for supporting them, those that support us. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.